T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And after a disappointing weekend for the Blues, we will switch gears right now and say hello to Will Leitch. Of course, you can read him at MLB.com. You can read him all over the place. You can hear him on KMOX all the time. Will, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good evening. I heard you talking to Joe Torre last week. I'm sorry, I can't quite reach the levels of Joe Torre, but I'm honored you'd lower yourself to talk to me nonetheless.
That was pretty cool, and one of the more exciting moments at a winter meetings that didn't have a ton of exciting moments. Again, follow Will on Twitter at William F. Leitch, MLB, New York Magazine, The Will Leitch Show on Sports Illustrated. Torre, a guy who is just, I'm fascinated by him, Will, because we kind of had the Hall of Fame, I shouldn't say kind of, we had the Hall of Fame debate with Harold Baines last week, and to me, to think about the Hall of Fame, Torre kind of represents, I think, what it should be about, and not just him as a player, but then what he did as a manager, and really at the end of his managerial career, what he's doing now as an executive, just I think kind of personifies the kind of person who has affected the game in a lot of ways and continues to do so.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because so much of, we saw this with Harold Baines last year, and we see it with the supposed PED users every year, the discussion of who gets in the Hall of Fame. I don't know, I feel like that used to be fun. That used to be kind of enjoyable, and now it's become like weirdly toxic, and everyone was so angry about Harold Baines, and then people are angry about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, and Jack Morris was the guy before. And I think, like, for me, that's one of the things I loved about your conversation with Joe Torre and Joe Torre in general, is I might disagree with some things that Joe Torre thinks about the Hall of Fame, but or some things about baseball, but for crying out loud, he's Joe Torre. He represents the organization's class. When I think of Hall of Fame, I think of Joe Torre, not just a player and manager, but just representing what we really kind of love about baseball, right? And so I think sometimes that's what the Hall of Fame is supposed to be, and it feels like it's become this toxic fight between old fans and new fans and stat people and non-stat people. And to me, that's why I love a guy like Joe Torre. Like, no one is going to really debate that that guy's a Hall of Famer and really represents the Hall of Fame as the way it is at its absolute best.
Will Leitch is with us. You can read Will again all over the place. Follow him on Twitter at William F. Leitch. So, a winter meetings in which a whole lot didn't happen, Will. We haven't spoken since the Paul Goldschmidt acquisition. Let's talk about that. Just initially, your thoughts and how you've processed them over the last couple of weeks since the Cardinals made the move to acquire Goldschmidt for Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, Andy Young, and a draft pick.
Yeah, it's pretty, I find it nearly impossible to argue with the transaction itself in a vacuum. The idea that, Arizona, I feel like they got a starting pitcher and a starting catcher for the next 5 years. And I feel like they did pretty good for a guy who they were going to lose anyway in 1 year. And the Cardinals gave up players that I think have contributed, and I think that we've been excited about for a while, but no one that was really going to be a big part of the season for 2019. And to me, what was kind of most remarkable about the move, other than the fact that Goldschmidt feels like such a perfect fit for what the Cardinals do, it is, and I think this goes into maybe the second conversation about the trade and what comes afterward, if anything comes afterward, the idea that this is the first time that I can remember where the Cardinals have said, we are all in for this year. And this year means so much more. This is supposed to be a team that's in perpetual contention and so on. And that's one of the reasons it's been so fun to be a Cardinals fan for the last 20 years. This team is never really putting all their chips on one season, and they're never taking a step back. They're always trying to win every year, but while also still keeping an eye on the future. This is the first time I can remember where they have said, we are putting everything on this season. And to do that with a guy like Goldschmidt, it's a great bet, and it's an exciting bet. It is strange that, like, it's very unusual for the Cardinals to have four major pieces in Waka, Michaelis, Ozuna, and Goldschmidt, all free agents next year. And so, to me, that, I know there's certainly differing views on this. To me, the great thing about the Goldschmidt move is it makes 2019 better. The only downside to it is if it becomes a replacement move for a move that could help beyond 2019, because there's still going to be a lot of talent here in the future. And, you know, I've said there's still the Harper talk, and I know I think the team has done their best to kind of tamp that down. And I understand that he's going to be an expensive player, but, you know, eventually the Cardinals are going to have to pay someone. And maybe, and, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk with Goldschmidt of like, well, he's going to love it so much in St. Louis and he's going to want to stay. And frankly, you know, we saw that with Holiday and Rowland and McGuire, but it's been a while. It's been a while since we've kind of had that a player to say, yep, I'll take less to come here. That's really not the way the baseball works anymore. Paul Goldschmidt feels like a player that could last with the Cardinals for a while. However, if the Cardinals are going to have to pay someone, whether it's Goldschmidt or whether it's Nolan Arenado or whether it's Bryce Harper, they're going to have to pay someone. As much as I love Paul Goldschmidt in 2019, and boy, I very much love him, I'm not sure I love him at 32 for 5 years, which is probably the type of thing he's going to want after this season. So that's what's strange about it to me, is you still have to address beyond 2019, and I feel like there's a way you can do that while also still helping 2019 too.
You can read Will's piece on Goldschmidt and more at MLB.com. And, you know, Will, also, like, he already took a, you know, sweetheart deal, so to speak, with Arizona the first time around, kind of like Anthony Rizzo did with the Cubs. So you would imagine that he's going to want to get paid.
I mean, and he deserves it. I mean, it's funny if you want to know someone that took, you know, the last time someone involving the Cardinals took a sweetheart deal, and then when he got a chance to get paid, took the absolute maximum amount of money because he'd taken that sweetheart deal, it was, of course, Albert Pujols. It was the last time they had a big right-handed hitting first baseman. And, you know, I think the idea that I understand, listen, Cardinals fans and Cardinals management have been starving for a big bat ever since Albert left. And I think we can all agree it was a good idea that he did not pay Albert. But that's a lesson to be had moving forward. I find it strange that a lot of the reaction to this deal, I think sometimes even within the organization, is, okay, we got your superstar, so you're welcome. And for the record, yes, I'm very happy that Paul Goldschmidt is on this team. I think he's going to be a terrific player for the Cardinals. But the idea that this solves the long-term problem of this team needs a superstar to build around moving forward, it solves that problem for 2019. But there's the history goes on a lot farther past 2019. It was surprising to me. As I said, they're going to have to pay somebody. And I don't know, as much as I love Goldschmidt for 2019, I don't think they're going to get a discount. I don't think they should give a discount. I think, like, players should get what they can, man, particularly in the way the kind of market is right now. If Goldschmidt has the year that the Cardinals want him to have, and I think he very well might have, he is going to be incredibly expensive after this season. So I think it's a little bit of an illusion to think he's just going to be starry-eyed about Cardinals baseball and take less. That's really not the players work anymore, the way players work anymore, and I don't think it's the way they should work anymore.
Will Leach with us on the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line. So you plug Goldschmidt in at first, Matt Carpenter in at third, and a lot of question now becomes the outfield with Ozuna in left, Bader in center. Derek Gould with a great piece yesterday on Dexter Fowler and how he's kind of rebounding, not just physically, but mentally as well. What's your take on Fowler, Jose Martinez, the pieces the Cardinals have right now, Will, and if they have what they need to cobble together whatever they're going to do in right field and put together a team that can compete in the Central?
Yeah, that was a really terrific piece by Derek Gould. I encourage everybody to go read that because, you know, I think it gets lost a little bit. Fowler had such struggles last year. I think it's been forgotten just how unique of a guy he is, and just there was a big contract. He got to a tough start, and there's still a lot of people that consider him a Cub. I feel like there's not been enough appreciation for what kind of person Dexter Fowler is, and frankly, what kind of competitor Dexter Fowler is. So certainly, I appreciate when I want the Cardinals to maybe make a bigger bet than necessarily what they're making on the free agent market right now, that's not necessarily because of Dexter Fowler. I feel like I like the idea of trying to give Dexter Fowler another chance. You've got 3 more years on that contract. I do understand that. And if you squint a little bit, you're like, okay, maybe if Fowler can just get you back to an average hitter and fielder, he can platoon with Tyler O'Neill, and you've got something there. Or if you can't get what you want for Jose Martinez, maybe you can try that. I understand that. But it's weird because in every other context, I feel like we've been told, okay, 2019, we're all in on this year. except for the number two spot in the lineup in right field, where we're just going to really cross our fingers and hope this works out. I'm excited. I'd like to see what Dexter Fowler has. Remember, it wasn't long ago where you heard a lot of fans saying they just need to drop him. They just need to eat that contract. I'm glad they're not doing that. I'm fighting Fowler. As rough as he was last year, I'd like to see him get some sort of rebound. But man, you really are counting out a lot now. If you're counting on either a rebound by him or a big leap forward by Tyler O'Neill for a team again that's supposedly all in for 2019. Martinez, for me, I know it's a risk. Ben Frederickson wrote a great piece about this, about it's a risk to trade that kind of big bat. But whew, I mean, every single time you saw Jose Martinez play the field last year, I mean, the team is screaming for a right fielder. Right field is his best position. And they don't want to put him out there. I think we saw enough him on defense to see why. So they have options. I'm just not sure any of them are good options, and I definitely don't think they're good enough options for a team that really seems to be riding everything on 2019.
What do you make of the Harper market so far? I guess I'm most surprised, Will, that it's been quiet. And I understand the way Boris sometimes slow plays stuff for his clients and when they usually sign when the calendar turns. But I've been a little surprised personally that there just hasn't really been much about him.
Yeah, there hasn't. And it's strange because, I mean, there's certainly been plenty of talk about Harper. It's just all been, we're not sure we're in on Harper. We're not sure we're touching Harper. And, you know, I feel like a lot of that is frankly Boris related. You know, it's worth remembering that last year's off season, which was generally considered the coldest hot stove market, where a lot of players did not get what they were expecting to coming into the season, hit Boris hard. His strategy that he usually takes, which is wait people out, did not work last year. And there were a lot of players that really kind of left out in the cold and left taking really short-term deals. I think you've seen already a lot of players, look at Lance Lynn, for example, that thought they were going to get a big deal last year, didn't, waited it out, didn't get one, and signed early for a multi-year contract this year. I think that strategy is, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the Boris strategy that's always worked is necessarily always going to work with all of his players. Now, Bryce Harper is obviously still going to get a lot of money, just like Manny Machado is going to get a lot of money. The longer you wait, it's funny because last year we're like, oh, wow, this is going to hurt Lorenzo Cain. And then Lorenzo Cain went out and signed a big contract, and Eric Hosmer signed a big contract. Harper is different. Harper is basically the platonic ideal of a free agent, a potential Hall of Fame player who is coming into a free agent market at the age of 26, and he's already put together a 10-war MVP season. You know what Bryce Harper can do. This is the time you think he would be able to maximize his contract. The problem with a Harper contract is people don't give out those kind of contracts that much anymore. There is no A-Rod contract anymore. There is no Giancarlo Stanton contract anymore. So that's the question. I wonder if a lot of this comes down to Harper. I wrote a piece at the beginning of this of the offseason for MLB.com arguing that Harper, of all players, could benefit from doing a massive amount of money for a short number of years. If he wants to take a 2-year deal and get a lot of money out of that, maybe that's the time to do it. I know that's not Boris's kind of ideal, but the market is not, it doesn't look like there is a 10-year, $450 million deal out for him. And people were speculating about that a couple of years ago. And so it'll be fascinating. The longer it lasts, you wonder if the Cardinals maybe could sneak back in.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like they're just trying to stay out of it right now.
Well, and he could also potentially still get that 10-year deal in 2 years, or I'm sure he might still get that.
That's the advantage of being 26, right? He's 26 years old. Yeah, he's still going to be able to, he can take another bite out of this pie in 2 years or 3 years or whatever he wants to do. And if he's unsatisfied with the market, remember, Harper is not coming off the best year of his career. He was the idea that he and Manny Machado are considered close to equal amount free agency would have been seemed ridiculous until after this year. Machado just had a monster year, and Harper had an excellent year, but not the best year of his career. And really, it's been a couple of years since he had his truly monster year. So you can put a couple question marks on that. But if I'm Harper, we know what he can do. Machado had the best year of his career last year, and it was not close to Bryce Harper's best year that he had 2 years ago. If there's ever anyone who wants to sign maybe a 3-year deal with a 1-year opt-out and just go nuts this next year, it makes a certain amount of sense for Harper because he can hit the market again at 27 with his entire career ahead of him. That's not really Boris's style, but Boris also is looking for inventive new ways to do things. And right now, a lot of those huge A-Rod deals, I'm just not sure they're on the table.
Will Leach is with us for a couple more minutes on the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open line. Will, I got to ask you, because I was following along on Twitter as you were at the MLS title. They call it the title game? Pardon my ignorance.
MLS Cup.
See, I'm the worst. We're just starting to try to get into this in St. Louis. What was that like, man? The atmosphere looked unbelievable. I watched some of it along on TV. It seemed just electric, incredible. Folks in St. Louis are fired up about the potential of maybe getting a team here in a couple of years with the proposed stadium from the Taylor family and Jim Cavanaugh. What was that like, and what's it been like to follow along on that ride for the last couple of years since you've been in Atlanta?
Yeah, it's been really exciting. I've been a season ticket holder for Atlanta United here in Athens for the last couple of years. And one of the things that, along with Matthew Leach, by the way, former MLB.com reporter for the Cardinals, lives out here in Athens, and we share tickets as a little old school Cardinals idea.
There you go.
What's really exciting about it is the thing that's really key to Atlanta United's success is two things. One, a lot of Atlanta sports teams in the past are the team of the South. And they like kind of represent the South as a general area. And Atlanta United understood very early on that, like, the way you go after a market is you look for a city that is looking for a team to call their own, an identity team, something, maybe a city that's kind of gone through a tough time, or a city that has like a bad rap nationally. That became the team of Atlanta. And because of that, you still had fans from throughout the South that wanted to watch them, but they are a very Atlanta urban diverse team. And that's really been the key to their success. They basically taken the young people and the international flavor of Atlanta and made it into this massive thing with a lot of help, frankly, from Arthur Blank, who's the owner of the Falcons and is really invested in that team. The key to their success has been they've got a great stadium. Mercedes-Benz Stadium is an absolutely terrific stadium. It's for the football team, and they don't open it up to 70,000 fans for all the soccer games, but they do for most of them. And they were outdrawing teams in England and in Germany a lot of this year. And they play an exciting style, and they didn't try to gimmick it up. They didn't go bring in Wayne Rooney or David Beckham. They really tried to, like, invest in young players and get people excited about them. And so they had a good team, and they had a fan base that was desperate for something to be excited about. So for me, that's what's kind of fun about the idea of MLS in St. Louis. Again, I don't think I think some of the deals have finally gotten a little bit better for the city than maybe they were early on. But if you can get it, to me, St. Louis has always been a terrific soccer town. I think the excitement level for them, you're going to see it next year with Cincinnati. Cincinnati had a lower level team that was extremely popular. And I think they're about to take the league by storm in a similar way than Atlanta did, to show that a city like that can really embrace an MLS team and really be into it. It's been such a fun thing to watch. That was louder than any football game I have been in. I've seen at that stadium. That includes the SEC championship game. So it was an absolute blast. And I don't think soccer is ready to take over the country yet, but certainly you see what happened last week, and you see what the future of it could be.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think everyone just getting more and more excited about the potential that Major League Soccer could, you know, decide to come to St. Louis, especially with the proposed stadium deal. Dan McLaughlin really has been all over that. He's been on the forefront of covering what's going on and what the possibilities are for St. Louis. So I think a lot of people fired up about that. Will Leach, follow him on Twitter at William F. Leach. Best place to go for everything that he's writing and everywhere you can find him. Happy holidays, man. Looking forward to the bragging rights game this weekend, and we'll talk again soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Go Illini. I'm sorry. Go Illini. Go Illini. Have a great holiday.
What do you think the line on that game is going to be?
I can see Missouri favored a little bit, but
they were favored last year and they got thumped.
Yeah. And I think Illinois is a little bit better than they were. I know the record doesn't show.
Yeah.
I think they're a better team than they were last year. And frankly, with Mark Smith getting the immediate transfer, it's going to be a very emotional game, I think, for both sides. I think to see what Ayo Dosunmu, who's really kind of taken the mantle as the guy that is wants to bring back Illinois basketball, that people thought Mark Smith was going to be, it should be a pretty exciting game. And it's good. I was there a few years ago when it was like half full.
Yeah.
Someone that grew up with that game and knows how important that game is. Our family tradition in the Leach family, we know Christmas is almost here because the Bragging Rights game is here. So I'm excited to see people fired up for it again.
Appreciate it, brother. We'll talk soon.
Be safe.
All right, that's Will Leach. Back in a moment on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.